More in Libya. Just this week, a federal judge in Washington ordered the Libyan government and six of its officials to pay more than $6 billion in damages to the families of seven Americans killed in the 1989 bombing of a French airliner over the Sahara. 170 people were killed. The judge had earlier ruled that Libya was directly responsible for the attack. Libya has until February 25th to respond. We wanted to talk more about Libya's role in the international community and its human rights record, so we turned to Fred Abrahams, senior researcher at Human Rights Watch. He joins us from our New York bureau. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mr. Abrahams, you've closely followed Libya's human rights record. You were in Libya in May 2005 on a fact-finding mission. Do you think there have been improvements in human rights there, to your knowledge?
You know, there have been some. There were release of some political prisoners. There was the abolition of a political court that was notorious for unfair trials. But Libya has such a long way to go to be brought up to international human rights standards. You still have no free media. There are no political parties in Libya. There is no civil society, no independent organizations that can express criticism of the government or the leader. His name is not mentioned. He's known as the brother leader, and I refer to Muammar Gaddafi. So Libya
is still mentioned.
He holds no official position of power in Libya. He is the leader of the revolution, and out of reverence to him, he's referred to as the guide, the leader, the brother leader. And a lot of it is also fear. I was in Libya for 3 weeks, and the intensity of the security apparatus is palpable. People were very afraid to speak. Our trip, we were monitored the entire time. We were on an official visit from the Libyan government with escorts from the Ministry of Interior. And people are very, very afraid, and with good reason, because you have political prisoners. You still have torture in Libya. There are reasons to be afraid.
Well, you heard the ambassador talk about the use of torture. He said it's not the policy of his country to engage in torture. If this does happen, it's an isolated incident. What do you say to that?
Well, look, governments always have two responses to allegations of torture. You know, first they deny, and if they can't deny, then they say there are bad apples. In Libya's case, I think that argument falls flat. We did extensive research in prisons. Although we were escorted, we demanded one-on-one interviews with prisoners of our choice, and people spoke to us about torture. I interviewed the Bulgarian nurses and the Palestinian doctor who were spent 8 years in prison for allegedly infecting the 400 children with HIV. They gave detailed testimony about electric shocks, about even some sexual violence used against them in detention. So, I think it's definitely happening. It is against the law in Libya, that the ambassador is correct, but it's not implemented. And so torture is still, I'm afraid, commonly used.
Is there any evidence that anyone has ever been punished for engaging in torture tactics?
Not that I'm aware, and we've asked the Libyan government for this. There was one case in relation to the nurses and the doctor that with the HIV case, they were placed on trial and they were acquitted. So to my knowledge, no one else has been punished. It's possible that some have, and it's just not known to me.
How do you respond to the decision to allow Libya to take its seat as the head of the Security Council? I mean, it is only a one-month position. It's a rotating position, so it's largely symbolic. But symbols do have meaning. So how do you respond to that as a human rights advocate?
You know, it's complex. You know, Libya still has a terrible human rights record. And so, you know, does it deserve to have this leadership position? But on the other hand, it's a chance for engagement. Libya is now under a certain amount of international scrutiny. And I think this is a good way it can encourage better behavior. I have to say there was also some debate within the Libyan government about whether taking that position was a good thing. It places Libya potentially at conflict with some of the world powers, particularly the United States. Potentially, Security Council could be dealing with issues of sensitivity like Israel or Iraq. And does Libya want to be in a position to confront the U.S. on those issues? But in the end of the day, my read of it is that the brother leader, Muammar Gaddafi, wanted it very much. He's driven to a large extent by his own ego. And he saw this as an important symbol, a symbol of Libya's rehabilitation with the international community.
Do you think that you think it's personally important to Muammar Gaddafi to be considered part of the community of nations again?
I think it is extremely important to him.
Why?
He craves acceptance. You can see it from his behavior. He was just recently in Paris. He met the French president, Sarkozy, and he reveled in that opportunity. He was in London a few years back, and he reveled in that. He is dying to come to the United States, is my understanding. So, you know, this is someone who has come back from being labeled the terrorist, and he wants to be taken back in the fold, accepted seriously.
You're saying that this was controversial within the Libyan government in part because there are differences of opinion. We heard one of them during my conversation with the ambassador over the question of genocide in Darfur. I guess this is the question that you have, is if you've got an issue which the world community generally has come to a consensus on this point. After some doing, I mean, the U.S. was not immediate in its understanding of the use of that term in that conflict. But now that they're there and much of the world community is there, is it an impediment to progress when the head of the Security Council has such a different view from the consensus of the other members? Or is that just to be expected?
Well, there are two ways to look at that. I mean, on the one hand, yes, it could be a serious impediment if they do not view the conflict through the same prism. On the other hand, Tripoli and the Libyan government has substantial influence, very good relations with the government in Sudan, in Khartoum. So it's also an opportunity for them as the Security Council president and also bilaterally to use leverage in a positive way behind the scenes to push for some positive developments there, particularly in this case or at this moment. The deployment of the hybrid peacekeeping force. It's a United Nations African Union hybrid force that the Sudanese government is blocking its full deployment, and hopefully Libya could help push the government in the right direction.
Finally, what tack would you like to see the U.S. pursue in dealing with Libya? For example, there seems to be some ambiguity about the Secretary of State's meeting with the foreign minister over whether human rights were discussed at all.
Right. I mean, you know, generally, the U.S. and Europe, we support the engagement. We think it's a good thing to improve relations, but not at the cost of human rights in Libya. Right now, the West is driven by two essential factors and goals. One is oil, because Libya has the largest oil reserves in Africa, and also on counterterrorism, because Gaddafi has rightfully cooperated in that regard, sharing intelligence and so forth. But human rights, meanwhile, are suffering. People are still in prison in Libya. Torture continues in Libya. And so we hope that Washington will not simply embrace Tripoli and Gaddafi for business and security reasons while neglecting the people who are suffering inside the country.
But what does that mean? Do you think that that means that the U.S. should discourage U.S. companies from signing these trade agreements, which they've gone forward with?
No, but we do think that relations should also be conditioned on improvements in the legal system, judicial system, transparency, the basic human rights standards, that tying the forward steps to those concrete benchmarks would be a good thing for the long-term stability and certainly for Libyans.
Fred Abrahams is a senior researcher at Human Rights Watch. He joined us from our New York bureau. Thank you so much.
Thank you.